You can't handle the truth.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this. And totally redeem yourself!
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
Get away from her, you bitch!
The first rule of Fight Club is, you do not talk about Fight Club.
To infinity and beyond!
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Hello and welcome to the Samuel and Manuel Movie Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Sam Reimer.
And I'm Manny Manuel!
It's Real Talk number 9. Hells got yeah. some stuff and some things to talk about today, but number 1 on the list. Thanks, Jordan. Thanks for stepping up to the plate. Yet again.
Yeah.
There has not been another person to so frequently and so reliably answer the bat signal whenever I got shit I got to do, which was very much the case last week.
Very much the case. The nervous part for me was I didn't get an immediate yes.
Oh.
Yeah, she's like, "Oh, let me just make sure."
Oh.
And I was like, started to sweat bullets a little bit, but she came through.
Nice.
She answered.
I choose to believe she actually didn't have anything. She just wanted to fuck around with you. And
no, she truly did. She truly did. But it worked out just fine. We reviewed In-N-Out.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you. Normally, we had one movie planned
yes.
last week that we didn't wind up getting to, obviously.
Yeah.
But I specifically asked that you save that movie for another week and yep. you choose something else to watch with Jordan, and I didn't even know what it was you landed on. So it was In-N-Out?
In-N-Out.
I've never heard of that.
Sam, I implore you to watch it.
Really?
Implore you.
Should I even look anything up about it, or do I just add it to the watch list?
Oh my god, if you go in blind...
I know nothing about it. It could be about the fucking burger chain, for all I know.
Okay, I'm going to tell you this, because this... I'm going to tell you two things.
Okay.
I'm not going to spoil the plot. But I'm going to tell you two things about it that I think will increase your desire to watch it. Number one, the star is Kevin Klein.
Intrigued.
Number two, part of this reason will help you, and part is selfishly for me. It is an Oscar-nominated performance from Joan Cusack.
Nice.
Yes.
Another one to take off the old list.
Yes. It'll be if you watch it, you will have seen all 5 Best Supporting Actress nominees.
I don't know the last time I had a complete category. Granted, we've already seen 5 of the Oscar movies this year.
Yes.
I'm not going to lie to you. I don't know if I will even have time for one more 97 movie on this list, but if I do.
We're going until like May.
Oh, yeah. But dude, it just took me a year to watch one movie.
Yes.
It just took me a year to watch one of the movies I'm going to talk about and what we've been watching.
I think you would enjoy this movie so much. It's one that I would say we should watch when you come over for a movie.
Oh, sick.
That's how much I truly believe that you would enjoy this movie.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's high praise.
Yes.
I love that.
Yes.
I guess we're going to have to arrange a movie night then.
Done. Done and done. But yes, thank you so much, Jordan, who, spoiler alert, also enjoyed the movie.
Sweet.
Yeah. I'll give you this spoiler alert. There's a fairly good chance that a scene from that movie will make my 52 in the review, like, scene of the year. Like,
that's awesome.
Tear-inducing laughter. That's how hard I was laughing.
Okay.
And I hadn't seen In-N-Out since 98 when it hit home video. So while I remembered pretty much about 90% of the movie, I forgot how funny that scene was. And I liked it so much that when I pulled a quote for the audio, I rewatched that scene twice.
Well, here's the thing. So if I look up really quick the 1998 Oscars, the only ones I can remember off the top of my head, oh, I might have more. Sorry, it was Good Will Hunting. So 1998 Oscars,
yes.
1997 film year.
Yeah.
Good Will Hunting, Titanic, As Good As It Gets. Am I forgetting a super obvious one?
It'll feel super obvious when you realize you didn't get it.
I'm just pulling it up here. We'll see. Oh, LA Confidential.
There
yeah.
you go.
And then the other one that I'm missing is doopy 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 doo, Full Monty,
yes.
which is the least obvious one. We have watched all of those, but it would have been, what, 2020?
Roughly.
Late 2019? Something in there. I seem to recall... No, we had T-Bone on for the Good Will Hunting episode, and I think it was just in the first few days of the pandemic.
2020.
Yeah, I think we recorded that episode like
March 16th.
Yeah, like a few days after the world shut down. Mm-hmm. Which was super bizarre. So yeah, it would have been like 4 years ago now. So obviously I've seen Good Will Hunting a bunch of times and LA Confidential somewhat recently, but I probably haven't seen Good Will Hunting since we recorded that episode. I probably haven't watched it since then.
Same, actually.
Yeah.
I don't even think it... Well, oh no, I would have logged it on Letterboxd because I would have retroactively logged it on Letterboxd.
Me too. Yeah, because I didn't start logging movies. Actually, that's not true. I had started logging movies, but it wasn't like a habit. It wasn't like every single time like it is now. I think the first movie I ever logged was 1917 back in December that previous year, 2019.
I got excited because I thought you were actually going to... I thought you were going to try and rattle off the best supporting actress nominees.
Oh, no. No fucking chance, dude. Are you kidding me? I've got them pulled up in front of me and I couldn't name them all for you. That's a lie. I definitely could. Gloria Stewart, Julianne Moore, Minnie Driver, Joan Cusack, Kim Basinger. Yeah. So I have four of the five other than Joan Cusack. That'd be a nice one.
And you know what?
I have four of the five supporting actors as well.
And you're going to get the fifth.
For Amistad?
Yeah.
Nice.
Leading actress, you're SOL. You're only going to have two.
Yeah, no chance I'm going to go see The Wings of the Dove.
And you're only going to have two of the leading actors as well.
Yeah. Yeah, not going to see. I've heard of Wag the Dog, but I don't really know it. Yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
Yeah, so
Jordan,
as far as 97 movies go, I will there's a couple things that I have, like, in particular I really want to rewatch. Good Will Hunting is kind of where I was going with that.
Okay.
One of my favorite movies of all time. Haven't seen it in like 4 years. Even though I know the movie
and
I'd be able to talk about it reliably, I'd still like to revisit it.
Okay.
And is The Game 97 as well?
Yes.
Yeah. I've been telling my brother to watch that for forever. I think I might tell him to come over for movie night or something. But regardless, In-N-Out officially skyrocketed to, let's say, top three rewatches.
Please. Please. And I would also say this is the kind of movie that I believe Emma would really enjoy as well.
All right, noted. Your recommendation has been noted.
Yes. Yes. Okay. All right, let's move into our weekly question. We have two this week.
Sweet. Love it.
As always, as promised, when I post a weekly question on Spotify, if you listeners out there are kind enough to answer them, I will read them on air. And so this week's question ties into last week's In Memoriam. And what is your favorite Carl Weathers performance? Our good friend and PFG Wes answered with Apollo Creed. Mm-hmm. Sam, what's your favorite
performance? Apollo Creed was the first one that came to mind for me. Looking at his filmography, I've unfortunately seen two of his three Adam Sandler efforts, let's say. I actually like him as Chubbs Peterson in Happy Gilmore. That's pretty funny.
I knew that.
I've seen Predator, Colonel Al Dillon. But I think it's far and away Apollo Creed.
Like,
now that I'm looking at it, it's not really close. Although Combat Carl in Toy Story 4 was another fun one.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say Apollo Creed.
Yeah, it's Apollo Creed across the board. His performance, I just rewatched Rocky a week and a half ago.
Oh, nice.
I was going to try and get Rocky 1 and Rocky 2 under my belt before we did last week's episode. Because I wanted to know which of those films I was going to pick as his best, because most likely it's probably two. You could argue three. But Jordan hasn't seen any of the Rocky franchise, including Creed.
That's interesting. I mean, I'm honestly not the most surprised by that, knowing Jordan and her film taste.
But she has interest in it. So
I think Rocky 1 is a fantastic movie.
It's unbelievable.
It's one of, like, the fact that Stallone wrote that while homeless and he was a nobody and he just got it made, you can feel the passion in that movie.
Yes.
And it's exceptional. It's exceptionally well made. There are some real genuine turds in the Rocky franchise.
This is my opinion of him, and I told Jordan this. So Rocky is a arguably genuine masterpiece.
Yes.
Rocky 2 is really, really good. Mm-hmm. Rocky 3 is a lot of fun. Rocky 4, your whole opinion on it depends on how much cheese you enjoy.
I mostly just shit on Rocky IV to get a rise out of T-Bone because I know he loves it. I still don't love it, but I get it.
I'm really interested. I don't know if you know this, but Sylvester Stallone recut it.
I did actually see it in 2021. There was a director's cut.
I really want to watch it. I want to see how different it is.
Yeah, I just, when I watch it, I just wish there were a few more montages of them training in it. So I hope that in the director's cut, they've inserted a few more of those.
I hope so as well. Rocky V is a fucking turd.
That is, I think I've seen most of Rocky V.
It is atrociously bad. Rocky Balboa, the sixth film, I've seen once. And I remember thinking it was meh. I didn't hate it as much as Rocky V. Then we get into Creed, which is...
Creed's great, man.
Arguably another masterpiece.
It's fucking awesome.
Creed 2, really good.
I never saw Creed 2, never saw Creed 3.
Creed 3, pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Creed 3 directed by Michael B. Jordan.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And you can tell that he likes anime.
Nice.
Yeah. So... that being said, Jordan has expressed interest in doing a Rocky franchise watch.
Oh, dude, I would like for the podcast?
No.
Oh, okay, just like on the side?
Yeah. So I told her, I'm like, when you're ready, let me know and I'll do it along with you.
I'll at the very least get to the first one with you guys, I'm sure. like, well, are you doing it like movie club style? Like over like this week it's Rocky 1, this week it's Rocky 2?
Yeah.
Sort of thing? Might be able to keep up with that. Maybe. Right. Probably not. We'll probably not knowing me.
We'll probably throw the offer out to everyone else.
Yeah. I'll keep up with as many as I can.
But I'm going to state it right now. I'm going to speak on Jordan's behalf, which I'm sure she likes a straight male speaking on her behalf.
Hmm.
It will be on her and I's schedule.
Oh, yeah. Like, I would not want anyone building their watching schedule around me because I have way too much going on right now to guarantee I'm even going to watch a movie in the span of a week.
Yeah.
There's no way.
I'm just excited you get the podcast one done.
Yeah. And I honestly do that on my one day off a week on Wednesday.
Yeah.
I do it on that day.
Beautiful. All right. The next question, which I posted on our Instagram today, is to win $3 billion. You have to survive 24 hours getting chased by a movie villain of your choice. Who are you picking? Here are some of the answers that some people responded with. I don't know if you'll know who this person is, but Mason Verger.
Nope.
Okay. He is the villain from Hannibal, the sequel to Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Easy pick. He is in a wheelchair.
That is an easy pick.
Okay. Next up, White Goodman.
Yep. Great pick.
Yeah. I don't know if this is a great pick, but I loved it because it got me right here in the feels. The Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Not a great pick, but like, you would die.
Yeah. The next one, The Wet Bandits.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then this one, I thought, genius. Genius pick. Ursula, the Sea Hag.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Awesome. Sam, what villain are you picking?
It's so funny the way my brain works. I was trying to think of like something clever like that, and I really couldn't. So I ran my brain back through like, who's a villain we've talked about on the podcast who's like physically weak but smart? Who's somebody like that? And my brain just went, oh, Scar from The Lion King. And then I was I was like, he's smart but kind of weak. I'm like, yeah, weak compared to a fucking lion. He's still a goddamn lion, so definitely not Scar. The next one that came to mind was Thanos, because when he would just snap your fingers and it would be done. Like, you wouldn't need to panic, you would feel no pain, you would just be dead. So
okay.
That'd be great. I don't think that's either. I think the Wet Bandits is a great fucking...
I love that answer.
That's a great answer. I think the guy's name... I'm trying to remember the name of the villain from this movie. I believe it is Charles Muntz. I think that's the character's name. From Up. I think that's probably the one.
Okay.
Granted, he has dogs, but if it's just like mono a mono, I would take my chances against a 90-year-old, even if that 90-year-old was a billionaire.
Okay. oops, sorry. Hold on one sec. That's a good answer. All right.
Yeah, I just quickly looked up famous movie villains, and the 25 or so that just came up on my screen are all like supernatural,
yes,
or criminal masterminds or psychopaths or.
So here, I picked one to cheat because I don't know if it's technically a villain, but I picked Jaws.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Then I picked the original Mummy.
Mm-hmm.
But the pick I'm gonna go for is someone that even if that person did catch up to me, ain't doing shit. I kind of went the same route. I went with Anton Ego from Ratatouille.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Anton Ego, that's pretty funny.
All right.
How about Lotso Huggenbear?
Just fucking punt that kid.
Yeah.
That's a good one. I like Lotso.
I'm writing that one. Lotso's a good one.
All right. Perfect. Okay. Every once in a while, I believe we said every fortnight, we're going to incorporate this into the real talk, is the Letterbox Showdown. And this one they labeled the Breadwinner, which is the best Oscar-nominated animated films. Now, here are, they list 20. Do you want me to count down the 20 for Letterbox?
Sure, why not?
Okay, so at number 20, The Boy and the Heron.
Yeah.
19 is Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio.
Okay. I have a feeling there's going to be more Miyazaki on this list than I'm comfortable with.
Okay. Next up at 18 is Shrek 2.
Bold.
Yeah.
I know that Shrek 2 has its apologists, though.
I barely remember it. I'm sure once I watch it, I'll be like, oh, right, this
I've
happens.
I've seen it a reasonable amount. Like, probably 3 times in my life.
Oh, that's a reasonable one?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's probably what I'm at as well.
Mm.
All right. Number 17 is Puss in Boots: The Last Wish.
I haven't seen it. From what I know about it, that's actually low.
It's fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
Yeah. Number 16, Coco.
Coco.
Coco. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Does that have Lady Gaga in it?
Number 15, a movie I've never seen. Coraline.
Oh, haven't seen it, hey?
Yeah.
I think you would like it.
Doubt it.
Really?
I have no idea.
Just being an asshole?
Yeah. Number 14, Howl's Moving Castle.
I fell asleep watching this with Jordan.
Haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Number 13, might be a little low for me. Monsters Incorporated.
That was number what?
13.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Number 12, Shrek.
Hmm.
Yeah. Number 11, Inside Out.
I like that. I like that it's that high.
All right. Here we go. Top 10. Uh-huh. Toy Story 3.
Okay. I know that's probably low for a lot of people. I've got no problem with it.
Yep. I know you. Number 9, Up.
Mm-hmm.
I think I need to rewatch Up because my recollection of Up is that opening scene is genius and then the rest is pretty good.
Again, I've seen Up probably four or five times in my life. And I like the movie. It's a 4 out of 5 for me.
Yeah.
But you're absolutely correct. Like, people, I think, in my opinion, kind of hold Up in really high regard because that scene
I agree.
Is so exceptional.
Yes.
But it's like a 5-minute scene, and the rest of the movie is good.
I agree.
There's a lot of comedic leaning on, like, dogs having high-pitched voices and, like, mannerisms of dogs.
Yes.
There's a lot of leaning on that. If that's your jam, great. It's not really my thing.
Yeah. So. All right, I'm with you. I think Up, a little too high.
Ooh, nice. Pop some of those balloons, bring it back down.
That's right.
I got you.
Number 8, Finding Nemo.
Cool.
Yeah.
I would. You could also, for the villain question, you could have any of the villains from Finding Nemo. Any of the sharks, I guess.
They're not villains.
I guess they're not villains. They're kind of just like...
There's no...
Fisher Friends. I guess, is there not really a villain in Finding Nemo?
I don't know. The barracuda at the beginning? The eel? No, there's no villain.
The dentist? Darla? Darla?
Yeah.
Might be a villain. I mean, she's a kid.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Hmm.
Yeah, not really a true villain in Finding Nemo. All right.
Number 7, The Incredibles.
Okay. Probably a little low. That's okay.
Number 6, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Oh, yeah. I forgot we haven't hit either of those yet.
Yeah, yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Number 5, Wall-E.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. We got some people of culture in the... On the list. That's good.
Number 4. I'm starting to feel that this movie is starting to garner a little bit more critical and acclaim. I think the appreciation of this movie has grown over the years. And it's Ratatouille.
Yeah, right? A sleeper.
Yeah.
A total sleeper.
I rewatched this within the last year. It's fucking brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
That movie is fan-fucking-tastic. Number three, wouldn't fucking sniff my list ever. Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Oh, yeah. It actually was a cut. It's top two Wes Anderson for me.
Okay.
And even that's like, it's pretty good.
It might be a top two Wes Anderson movie for me.
Yeah.
Number two, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Okay. I was wondering where that was going to be.
Yeah.
So hold on. Let me try to figure out what we're...
You're not going to get it.
It's not Spirited Away?
It is.
Okay. Spirited Away. Yeah, that checks out. That checks out.
I've seen that once. I remember nothing.
I saw that once a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
and didn't really get it. Like, I got it, but I didn't really get it. Mm-hmm. It was good. I kind of forgot about it. A few months ago, Emma brought it up in conversation as a movie she really liked, and I was like, I didn't really get that the first time. Let's throw it on again. We threw it on again. I didn't get it. That is maybe my... I don't even know if you can call it a hot take, because I definitely don't think it's a bad movie.
Okay.
I don't think it's a bad movie at all, but it might be one of my most controversial opinions, because that's like a... It's in like the mid-4s on Letterboxd. Like, it is a very highly acclaimed movie.
Okay.
It might be like a 4.5 or something.
Sweet fucking Christ.
It's something crazy like that. Hold on. Yeah, are you pulling that up for me? I would love for you to get me the exact, the Letterboxd score on...
It's fucking 4.5.
Yeah, it's 4.5. It's insane. Like, the average person gives that a near perfect grade.
It's 51% of the people have given it a 5.
Yeah.
50 fucking one.
And, like, good for you for liking that movie so much. Person who is, statistically, person who is listening to this right now, good for you for liking it that much.
805,000 people gave it a 5.
I just don't really get that. It is visually spectacular. It is a feat of animation that is incredible. The story does not connect with me even a little bit. So I don't really know how to go from there. I think it's a little bit silly and nonsensical at times. But that's maybe my most controversial film opinion ever. So
I don't think so.
I'll honestly have to rack my brain to think of one that's more controversial than that. Something that we're like, I think a 4.5 movie is just okay. The highest ranked movie that I've ever given a failing grade to, you know what it is? Have I ever told you this?
No.
It's Leon the Professional. Leon the Professional has a 4 on Letterboxd, and I gave it a 2.
I remember that. Devastated me.
Yeah. But.
Oh,
no. I was going to say, that. I guess that is still a larger gap between Letterboxd score and my score than Spirited Away is. Because 1.5. 4.5 minus 3 is 1.5. 4 minus 2 is 2. Math.
Math rules.
Math rules. We love math and statistics, baby.
Sam, why don't you give us your top 10 that you quickly put together?
Yes, I put this together in like 10 minutes before we came on air, so please don't flame me, listener, if there's any crazy omissions. But I think it's relatively thorough, and I'm at least somewhat happy with
it. Right, you're going ascending as well, right?
Going ascending as well. So number 10, Coraline. Okay. I actually really like that movie.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Good. Yeah.
Okay.
Were you not expecting that?
No.
Okay. Number 10, Coraline. Number 9, Monsters, Inc.
Okay.
Number 8, Across the Spider-Verse.
Across.
I think I'm comfortable with it there.
I like it there. Mm-hmm. Thank you. That makes me happy.
Number 7, a film that has risen up the ranks in acclaim, would be Ratatouille.
Sweet Jiminy Crickets.
Yes, indeed. Number 6, bit of a Homer pick, but honestly, it's one scene away from being number 1 on this list, and that's Soul.
That is a Homer pick?
Yeah.
But I have no problem, because if you remember, I predicted that to be your number 1 film of the year.
Yep, and there was just that one problem that I was like, oh, we're so close. And in retrospect, speaking of animal humor bringing it down, there's a bit too much with a cat in the middle. Just like a little bit too much with a cat
mm-hmm.
in the middle. Number 5, Inside Out. Sorry, are you trying to write these down as I'm going?
No, on? I'm not.
Okay, number 5 is Inside Out, a movie that I know, in particular, T-Bone hates.
Yes,
T-Bone hates
with
Inside
a fiery
Out,
passion.
Which is hilarious, because I love Inside Out. I cried a lot.
I wonder if I can get T-Bone to go to Inside Out 2 with me.
I would love that. I would pay any... I would love to be there with you for that.
He wanted me to go see Madam Web with him.
Make a trade?
Maybe.
That'd be great. So number 5 is Inside Out. Number 4, I'm looking at the placement of this on the list, and I'm actually, I had a little bit of self-doubt putting it this high. I'm not mad at it.
I think I know exactly what you're going to say.
It's Marcel the Shell with Shoes On.
I knew it.
This is a movie I've really grown to love in the last couple of years. Yeah. In just a few short years of it being out. It's really, really good.
Sweet.
Number three, from here on out, we're like childhood classics, so fair enough. Number three, Finding Nemo, a movie that I grew up with. It's the first Pixar movie I think I remember being released.
Okay.
I was a little bit too young to remember Monsters, Inc. being released, I think. I didn't go to it in theaters at any rate, but I did have it on VHS. But Finding Nemo, I saw in theaters. Same with number two, The Incredibles, a movie that holds up incredibly well in so many regards. And number one is... a movie that made my top 20 of all time. Shouldn't be a surprise to you. That's my number one. That'd be WALL-E.
I was wondering where the fuck WALL-E was. I started going, Jesus Christ, I thought I fucking knew who you were.
No, WALL-E's number one.
All right. Nice list.
Yeah.
Nice
list. Like for 10 minutes, I think that's not bad.
It's pretty good.
You will notice the absence of any Hayao Miyazaki movie. I am sorry, but that's just, it's just how I feel.
There's nothing wrong with feeling that way.
Yep.
So I decided to make an eclectic list.
Oh, I love it.
I decided to go with my gut and really omit a lot of movies 100% that are better than my number 10. Because my number 10 is a movie that I have watched a few times. I'd say I probably watched this movie about 5 times. And every time I watch it, I have a really good fucking time. Mm-hmm. My number 10 is Rango.
Nice. I've actually never seen Rango. I just had somebody delightful. Talk to me about Rango a few days ago, actually. That's interesting.
Yeah. Side note with Rango. It is an animated film, CGI animated film. With the cinematography helped out by Roger Deakins.
I remember this, actually. Yes. I remember seeing that and being like, what the fuck? So is it gorgeous?
Yeah. Yeah, it really is.
That's awesome.
It's unfucking believable.
That's great.
Yeah, love Rango.
So is it... I actually just came across this question the other day. I'm sorry to interrupt you at number 10.
No.
Is it cinematography if there is not a lens? I encountered this for a different list that I'm putting together for something we're working on. Is it cinematography? Can you nominate an animated film for best cinematography?
No,
I guess no. Okay, that's kind of the conclusion that I reached. But the fact that Deakins worked on it is interesting to me. Then let's say,
yeah,
because I imagine it would be out of his wheelhouse.
I agree.
He of course has a great eye for things like framing and lighting and whatnot, but he is not physically operating a camera. So I found that interesting.
My number 9, I decided to, again, go kind of outside the box. I wanted to put this in there for the originality of the idea and the enjoyment I had from watching it. My number 9 is I Lost My Body.
Yeah, I actually almost had that on mine. I really like that movie. Yeah. I think people should check it out. It's animated, but it is very much like a grown-up
yes.
film. It's
do not watch with your children.
Dude, the rat scene in the sewers yep. is intense.
Very.
Oh my yeah. God.
My number 8 is a movie that blew me the fuck away when I watched it, and I'm really excited to rewatch it again soon. My number 8 is Kubo and the Two Strings.
Yeah, another last-minute cut from my list. Great pick.
My 7, 6, 5 mm-hmm. are all standard. My 7 is The Incredibles. Mm-hmm. My 6 is Monsters Incorporated, and my 5 is WALL-E.
All, no complaints.
My number 4... is the exact same as yours. Marcel.
Let's go!
Yep. When I saw that was on there, I was like, that's in there.
Yeah.
And when I put it on my list and when I started ranking, I'm like, this is going at number 4.
It's fucking delightful.
Yep.
It is a delightful movie.
To the surprise of nobody, my number 3 is Toy Story 3. No. A movie that
actually,
means...
I am surprised by that because I thought it would be higher, honestly. Yep.
It is a movie that means a lot to me. A lot to me. And in all honesty... it is going there really on the strength of 2 scenes. The trash scene mm-hmm. and the ending.
Yeah.
The rest of the movie is pretty decent, but those 2 scenes carry such emotional weight for me that it elevates this movie to another level.
I do kind of feel... I know I kind of come off as a Toy Story 3 hater at times, let's say. Actually, I really enjoy that movie. I think it's a really good effort by Pixar. It didn't make my list, obviously. Yeah. But I do feel similarly... about that movie as I do about Up. Not to the same degree, but I do feel that it's leaning primarily on a few excellent scenes
yep.
to bring up kind of the rest of the movie.
Yep. And I can understand it. If I look at Up in the same way, if you are so incredibly affected by the opening of Up, which it does affect me, mm-hmm. but if it affects you as deeply as those 2 scenes do for me, I guess I can understand the elevation. Mm-hmm. I really want to rewatch Up. But there's other parts in Toy Story 3, like when Buzz gets reset to.
Oh yeah, that's great.
Fucking hilarious.
That's a great gag.
Yeah, and Ken.
Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Ken just killing it in movies. Anyways, my two and the one are Spider-Man Into and Across.
Yeah, okay. I guess I should have expected that.
Yeah,
probably.
Into
at two, Across at one.
I got Into at one and okay. Across at two.
Do you think maybe they might flip flop it when Beyond comes out?
Then it'll probably be 1, 2, 3.
Probably
1, 2, 3.
No pressure to Beyond.
I know. I have Into at number one because it was so innovative and mind blowing at the time. So it gets the nod at number one for being there first. Mm-hmm. I truly think that Across is a better movie.
Because there's a part of you that had kind of already seen it already.
Yes. Yeah. I wasn't. I think that's what makes Across so good is that I was no longer blown away by what they were doing on screen. I was blown away by the story they were telling and how much they got me to care about those characters. That's why Across is so high for me. And Oscar Isaac's in it. Okay. All right. That wraps up Letterboxd Showdown. That's fun. We're going to do that more often. I will try to give you more notice on the showdowns.
You'll have to remind me of what the voting is like on like what the process is for their lists.
You submit a list with the hashtag showdown, and so for this one you were supposed to put Oscar Annam.
Right.
And you could make the list as long as you wanted, but only the top 10 get counted.
Right.
And so the number Spirited Away is the one that made the most top 10 lists.
Right.
That's how they got them ranked. So
it's just by raw number of top 10 appearances.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Doesn't have a super secret scoring system.
Not like you.
Yeah. All right. That's fun. We're definitely going to do that again.
That is fun.
All right. Let's get into what we've been watching. Sam, what have you been watching?
Yeah, so I got a few I want to talk about here. I'll make kind of short. I try when I bring up movies that I've watched many, many times, I try to say something new about them every mm-hmm. time. Mm-hmm. So I did rewatch La La Land this week.
That's right.
A movie that is quickly climbing the ranks of just one of my all-time favorites. I've come to really enjoy La La Land and the work of Damien Chazelle, which we'll kind of expand on maybe a little bit later. I just wanted to bring up about this time that I recently found out that one of my coworkers, who I wasn't going to name names.
Well, I like that.
But I'm actually going to name him by name because it is his birthday today. So I'm going to give a shout out to a guy whose name is also Jordan. I know we already have one Jordan here, but I want to give a shout out to my coworker Jordan, whose birthday it is today.
Happy birthday, buddy.
Because he says that he hates La La Land.
What the sweet fuck? Does he hate Joy?
I guess he must. And I will also point out, this is a man whose film opinion I do respect, and he has worked on films. He has composed scores for films. He went to school for composition. He went to school for composition with a minor in film. So I do believe that he knows what he's talking about, especially from a technical perspective.
Okay.
Which is why we got into an argument at work the other day about the cinematography of the movie La La Land, which he said he did not like. He said he did not like the cinematography of La La Land. And I'm here to flame him while he's not here to defend himself. I was so mad that he called out the cinematography of La La Land that I had to look up what the hell beat La La Land for best cinematography at the Oscars.
Oh.
Do you remember what it was? It's a trick question. It won best cinematography.
I'm like, no, I don't remember.
Yeah, it won best cinematography. It lost to nothing. It had the best cinematography at the Oscars in 2017 of the film year 2016. Listen. This is all subjective, you know, not everybody has to like the stuff I like, but for my money, there's very few movies that are more technically well made in the 21st century than La La Land. You can hate it for a lot of reasons. You can hate it for being a typical Oscar movie about how hard it is to be a white artist living in LA. That's a valid criticism. But like Manny said, if you enjoy fun, I don't know how you can dislike La La Land. It's fucking excellent. I will also note that he loves Spirited Away and Hayao Miyazaki. So him and I have disagreed on a couple of things already, but he's a great dude. And happy birthday, Jordan, if you ever happen to hear this. Yeah, so anyway, I just wanted to say that I rewatched La La Land.
Jesus, was anything going to beat it for cinematography? The only other good-looking movie that year was...
Moonlight?
Moonlight was fine.
Yeah, it was good.
Arrival?
Yep, Arrival.
Wow, yeah.
No, it was never going to be anything other than La La Land.
Wow, wow.
A beautiful movie that also moves me to tears almost every time. Yeah, for some reason, it didn't this time. But the fucking what could have been montage is just heart-wrenching. And Yeah, I love the character. I love both Seb and Mia and their banter. And Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone have exceptional chemistry. From having worked together so often, so many times, they just play off each other so well.
Yeah.
And comedic, romantic, whatever chemistry you want to say, they fucking got it.
Yep.
So La La Land, to the surprise of no one, 5 out of 5 for me.
Yeah, I already wrote it down.
You have anything you want to add about La La Land?
Oh, why?
next up. So I believe in giving people and artists the benefit of the doubt and a fair chance.
Interesting.
So, in spite of the flack that this person has gotten on tonight's podcast, I decided to go see the new Hayao Miyazaki film, The Boy and the Heron. Which I don't believe I have talked about on the podcast yet. You can stop me if I have, but I don't think that I have. I still don't get it. I'm sorry. I still don't get it. This is a film that has been so highly acclaimed. And I don't say that I don't get it to mean that this is a bad film. It is obviously, once again, visually astounding. It is beautiful and imaginative and so cool. I connect with stories when they have riveting and relatable characters who are forced to make decisions, and stories that make sense, and decisions that have clear consequences, wow, and a plot line. And I realize that this sort of stream of consciousness style of storytelling is considered to be a benefit, not a feature. Or sorry, a benefit, a feature, not a bug. That's what I'm trying to say. A feature, not a bug. We got there eventually. I understand that it's supposed to be a little bit dreamlike and very fantastical, but it is just not what scratches the itch for me. I had a great time kind of, for lack of a better term, turning my brain off and looking at the movie because it is fucking gorgeous. But I can't once again connect with much in this movie, unfortunately. And I say unfortunately for my sake. I'm missing out. I'm clearly missing out because this is, I think, not considered one of Miyazaki's tippy top finest, and it's got like a 4.2 on Letterboxd last I checked. It's considered to be one of the best animated movies of the year again.
I think it's a front runner to win.
Yeah, which is too bad because there's at least one other one that I would love to see take home the gold. I will be upset if this beats Across the Spider-Verse. I would get it, but I would be upset. So yeah, once again, Boy and the Heron had a good enough time. By the way, I will also add that here in Kamloops, we don't get a lot of, let's say, film culture, I guess. We don't get a lot of film screenings, but the Kamloops Film Society downtown is doing a lot of work to hopefully change that. And I got to give a round of applause to the city of Kamloops, and I don't mean like the organization, I mean Kamloops and the people in it. For going out for this movie.
They showed up.
Yeah, they fucking showed up. There's videos online of the lineups outside the theaters. My opinion aside about this film, it's so nice that the people can go, hey, you should bring this film here. And then they have it in two theaters at the same time. And it sells the fuck out. And there's a lineup around the block. That is what I love to see.
I loved seeing that.
It honestly felt like I was watching a movie in the 90s. It felt like I was lined up to a theater, giddy to go in. I went in with kind of low expectations, knowing what I had thought about the last two Miyazaki movies that I'd seen. But it made me excited. It made me excited to go there for that movie, and it made me excited to go back. So I just wanted to give a shout out to the fine people of Kamloops who showed up for this movie, and so much so that the Kamloops Film Society is going to bring it back.
Nice.
It looks like. So a shout out to them, Boy and the Heron. 3 out of 5 for me. But chances are, if you're listening to this, you're probably going to like it more than I did.
Sweet. Haven't seen it. Haven't really connected with Miyazaki. I plan on watching a lot more of his movies.
I kind of want to see Grave of the Fireflies, which I've heard is like an all-time sad movie, but also a little more, how can I put this, like based in reality, based in the real world. And I don't know. I feel like maybe that might be the key. That might be the thing to unlock it for me.
I watched, I think it's called Porco Rosso.
Oh, yeah.
I had a really good time.
Yeah.
But that's one.
An underrated strategy, which I've started to maybe take a little more seriously in my head, is if there's a filmmaker you don't particularly like, maybe check out a movie that their fans don't like.
Oh.
For example,
a good recent example for me is Wes Anderson. Asteroid City is not considered one of his best, especially by his fans. I really liked it, and I'm not typically a Wes Anderson fan. So, you know.
I was really hoping you were going to say, if you have a filmmaker you don't like, don't watch their stuff. And I was like,
let me put it this way. If there's a filmmaker you don't like where you haven't given up on them, you still want to get in there. Try one of their like lesser known movies or one of their lesser appreciated movies. Okay. You might be surprised.
All right.
The movie that took me a year.
Here we go.
A year to watch.
No, more than a year.
More than a year. Okay, so.
Technically, 2 years.
Why technically 2 years?
Because I played you the clip from last year saying you were going to take. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, fine.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to say.
Yeah, like I'm counting a year. Okay, so the movie's First Man, first of all. So as established.
Do you want me to play the clip again?
No, that's fine. I think I got the idea with the clip. So listen, I love Whiplash, mm-hmm. Damien Chazelle's first directorial effort. I love La La Land as well. And then Babylon came out in 2022. And I said, surely this man can't hit the hat trick for me. And he did. All three of those films got 5 out of 5. Mm-hmm. I loved all three of the films that I'd seen. But I knew that there was a fourth one that I had not seen called First Man. So when Wes and I went to Babylon in 2023, in January of 2023, I said, next time I get a chance, I'm going to watch First Man. And it took me a fucking year to get around to it after that, is what I meant by that statement.
I see.
Manny, it didn't get a 5, as you know.
I do know.
It didn't get a 5. However, I think I liked it more than most in our group chat. I did have the pick for the Manny Movie Club this week. I did select this movie. Thank you for everybody who paid money to rent it, because I forgot to check if it was on a streamer first. I just really needed an excuse to get this movie under my belt. I seem to like it more than most in the group. The consensus in the group was kind of that, unfortunately, Neil Armstrong kind of seems to have just been a bit of a dull person mm-hmm. in real life. I don't think, if I'm understanding it correctly, I don't think the criticism was really with Gosling's performance.
Nope,
I think
there's no problem with
all of us kind of believed that his performance was true to life. Unfortunately, he just had the misfortune of playing a bit of a dull person. While I think that is all true, I enjoyed lots of things about the movie. The opening scene in the cockpit of a jet got my blood pumping. Mm-hmm. It was very claustrophobic and scary and very effective. And Damien Chazelle, his cinematography in these really close scenes, the claustrophobic scenes, very, very well done. And I liked the way that there's a phrase I heard recently for the first time. I'm probably late to the party on this for all the film snobs out there. I heard a phrase, dirtying the lens. I don't know if you've heard that before, but it's kind of putting stuff in frame that doesn't make it look so nice. He dirties the lens a lot. People breathing on the lens, smudges, stuff close up and out of focus. It makes it feel very claustrophobic, and I liked the feel of those sort of scenes a lot. Additionally, even though Neil Armstrong was probably a bit of a dull person, let's say, I liked the portrayal of him as somebody who is simply unable or unwilling to communicate with the people that he loved. He definitely has the air of a very stereotypical boomer man who grew up. I think he fought World War II, right? I think he would have fought World War II. Maybe not. No. Regardless, grew up around that area, let's say, around that era. So very like manly area of history. Like, don't talk about your feelings. Keep everything balled up inside. He strikes me as a very stereotypical man of that era. And I think the film can come off as boring at times because they're trying to portray him as like a tortured individual who can't say what he's feeling. The film begins with tragedy, which really did affect me. And a lot of the time in the film, he's kind of shot from behind. Whenever it's implied that he might be thinking about something sad, he's kind of shot from behind, not really a shot of his face. And you're left to imagine what it is he might be thinking. Even when people come up to him and say, hey, like, you can talk to me. What is it you might be thinking? He does not turn to the camera. He stays facing away from the camera. There's one scene in the backyard when somebody comes up to him after another tragedy and says, hey,
Jason Clark, an actor I love.
They're saying, hey, what are you thinking right now? And he said, I didn't come out here because I wanted to be talked to. And he doesn't even face towards the camera.
Great moment.
Yeah, it's an awesome moment. And that moment, I think, really exemplifies for me what the film's trying to do. I think it's really trying to show this man was tortured and complicated, but just like every human is, but kept it all bottled up inside and didn't really let anybody in. And it's sad because of that. So that characterization of him really worked for me. I understand why others felt that he was so boring. It's because it's a little bit, I don't want to say easy to miss or nuanced. That's kind of not the point. It's very quiet, let's say. Very quiet, and I can totally understand if it didn't do it for you. It worked for me in a lot of times. And then, of course, spoiler alert, we end with the moon landing. We made it to the moon, people. we end with the moon landing, and the moon landing scene is not only technically brilliant, is a feat of filmmaking for Damien Chazelle to have shot this. It's beautiful looking.
It's unreal.
So that is an excellent scene. It was already an excellent scene when I thought, oh, wow, we're going to the moon. But then when he makes it to the crater. Do you know if that's a real moment, by the way? Do you know if that's a real thing that happened?
I feel skeptical on it.
Yeah, I don't know for a fact that it happened. And to me, it honestly doesn't matter whether it did happen or not. It's just such an awesome conclusion to the arc and only furthers the portrayal of this man as somebody who is silently and internally grieving constantly. Somebody who is being tortured moment to moment, but cannot speak the words and communicate it to people, is incapable of saying that to people. So I really enjoyed the movie. It's certainly imperfect. Pretty easily Damien Chazelle's weakest of the four, I think. But I love that he tried to go a different direction. The score by Justin Hurwitz is really good. And I'm really glad that I picked it. It got a 4 out of 5 for me.
Couple things. Neil Armstrong fought in the Korean War. Mm. And apparently, quick Google check, the bracelet thing is
a fabrication.
Fabrication.
Yep.
A dramatic effect.
There you go.
Which is fine.
Yep. I think it's a great touch.
I have no problem with it being added in there. It is a fantastic moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I enjoyed First Man for the technical aspects. I actually forgot that Jason Clark was in it, so I was super fucking excited because he's an actor I love. The technical brilliance of the film is undeniable. Claire Foy is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember.
As the adult who can communicate and does.
There are some really great moments. Another great scene is when she forces him to talk to his kids about his trip to the moon.
Yeah.
Powerful. It is what it is in regards to, I think Gosling's performance is really good. He plays that stoicism of Neil Armstrong really well. But because his character is sadly, for me, uninteresting, I just found myself repeating the same opinion I had when I saw it in theaters. In theaters, this movie in theaters was infinitely better than watching it at home.
Mm-hmm.
I just found myself not quite bored, but closer than I wanted to be considering the talent involved in this film. And so it was a 3 for me, easy 3. Wasn't touching a 4, was going nowhere near a 2.
Mm-hmm.
It was a perfect 3. The kind of movie that I will probably in 5 to 7 years be like, I should give that another watch.
Yeah.
And I'll watch it.
And then
it,
give it a 3 again.
And then I'll give it a 3 again. Yeah.
I also just want to read this. One of the most chilling things of the movie, it doesn't really announce itself as such, but I had heard this before. This is, you'll remember this scene from the movie. This is the real speech that was written for, I believe it was Nixon at the time. This was the real speech that was written for Nixon in the event that the astronauts were unable to make it home.
Yes.
Fate has ordained that the men who went to the moon to explore in peace will stay on the moon to rest in peace. These brave men, Neil Armstrong and Edwin Aldrin, know that there is no hope for the recovery, but they also know that there is no hope, or that there is hope for mankind in their sacrifice. These two men are laying down their lives in mankind's most noble goal, the search for truth and understanding. They will be mourned by family and friends, and they will be mourned by their nation. They will be mourned by people of the world. They will be mourned by a Mother Earth that dared to send two of her sons into the unknown. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit. In ancient days, men looked at stars and saw their heroes in the constellations. In modern times, we do much the same, but our heroes are epic men of flesh and blood. I think that is an awesome speech. I'm thankful that he never had to give it, but it is bone-chilling to hear.
Yeah.
That we really didn't know. We really didn't know if we were going to be able to recover these people.
Nope.
We had no idea if it was going to work.
Nope.
And the film really drives that home as well, just how dangerous it really was.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just how many people had to die on the path to it.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway, that's what I've been watching this week, and the Apollo 11 speech, I guess.
Awesome. You watched three films with an average rating of 4 across the board. Mm-hmm. I wish I could say the same. I also watched three films. So I knocked off a couple 1997 films. The first one I needed to get rid of because it has a Best Actress nomination for Julie Christie in the movie Afterglow. A handyman with marital problems meets a housewife with the same. This stars Nick Nolte as the handyman, who is married to Julie Christie, a former actress. They have an understanding in their relationship where he is allowed to sleep around, and she doesn't have much of a problem with it. He meets this housewife who is desperate to have a child. And her husband could care less about her, their relationship, or her needs as a woman. He also seems to have a little bit of a fetish for older women, as he continually flirts with his much older secretary. He is very rich, by the way. I can't remember exactly what he does. This housewife, played by Laura Flynn Boyle, hires Nick Nolte to fix one of their rooms into a baby room. They start to flirt a little bit, and Nick Nolte makes it abundantly clear very early on that he basically has an open marriage, that he is allowed to mess around. This intrigues Laura Flynn Boyle's, curiosity, and they eventually consummate their feelings for one another.
Nice.
This movie was kind of billed. These are the tags on IMDb. Comedy, drama, romance. So you're thinking could be like a rom-com. This was not funny at any point. This movie was not entertaining, except at one point. And even at that point, it wasn't as entertaining as it should be, considering everything that happened. So, easy two. The parts that save it, Julie Christie is pretty good in this. I can tell you right now, going forward, I will be able to remove her when I need to slot in a Best Actress nomination.
Nice. That's awesome.
She is definitely good, but I just don't see. I am struggling off the top of my head to think of what leading actress part I would want to slot in, but I'm looking forward to being able to put them in there. Yeah, skip. Skip, skip, skip. Don't bother. I was so uninterested in this movie, I didn't write a review for it.
I write a review for basically everything.
I try to write a review as much as I can, but for this movie, I just found myself kind of so uninterested. I honestly didn't know what I was going to write in it. And for myself personally, I love seeing other people's creativity, but if I don't feel I can write something in I prefer to have my reviews a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. The one sentence or two sentence reviews that are very witty and great, I love them. Not my cup of tea, mm-hmm. And so I don't bother. So, yeah, Afterglow, a 2.
Mm-hmm.
Easy 2.
Yeah, I will not be checking this out. Sounds terrible.
Yep. The next movie is a movie I'm pretty sure you love. And that is the 1997 animated film Hercules.
Admittedly, it's been probably a good 10 years since I've seen Hercules, mm-hmm. So I'm excited for this.
The son of Zeus and Hera is stripped of his immortality as an infant and must become a true hero in order to reclaim it.
I know that last time we talked about this movie, the first time we did 97, you said you did not care for this movie.
Sure didn't, and sure didn't again. Spoiler, gets a 2.
Nice.
So, I found this movie boring as fuck. I found that I think they're the Fates, the gospel Fates, mm-hmm. singing, annoyed me. incessant.
Oh, dude, I love Zero to Hero.
Incessant.
Zero to Hero is a fucking upper echelon Disney song.
I do remember. Hold on. Can I? I wonder if it's in here. If I go here, and then I go here, and then I go. Here we go. All right. I'm going to read my review from. Oh, it doesn't say when I did it.
I bet. I mean, if it was 97, it was probably sometime in 2020.
Yeah. Okay. Here's my review from back then. Wow. Haven't seen this since it came out in 1995. Wrong fucking year. Good job, Manny.
Good job.
And I can see why I didn't revisit it. This film is a tough watch. The songs aren't fun, the character designs are horrible, and the story is a slog. Hercules is a boring and uninteresting main character, and his sidekicks are even worse, with Phil being extremely annoying. Danny DeVito's voice work and jokes are cringeworthy as he pathetically attempts to recreate what Robin Williams did with the genie. The animation style looks sloppy and rushed. The only reason to watch this movie, and the only reason it avoids a one-star rating, is the brilliant work they did with James Wood as Hades. Possibly one of Disney's best animation villains, he's the saving grace of the film. I don't ever see myself watching this again. A total dud. 2 out of 5. Now, my opinion on that hasn't changed much, with the exception of that I actually had as Pain and Panic.
Oh, yeah.
I had a little bit better time with them this time. Other than that, not for me. Not for me.
I actually just added this to my rewatch list as you were talking about it, because, like I say, it's been a good 10 years since I've seen this movie, and admittedly, I've only probably seen it 3 to 4 times in my entire life, and maybe, yeah, and not since I was a teenager. Mm-hmm. So it's possible that my film opinion has changed a lot in the last 10 years. It's possible I don't like it as much. I don't know. The thing that I remember most about Hercules, honestly, is the songs.
That's great.
Yeah. So I'll be interested to revisit this. I'll be interested too.
Okay. Well, I hope that it brings back some nostalgia and you get some enjoyment of it, but this is not for me.
Okay.
The last film I want to talk about was a special viewing. I decided to surprise one of my best friends for her birthday.
Oh, yes.
Mushhead celebrated her birthday. I won't reveal her age because I'm a good friend. I surprised Mushhead by taking her down to Vancouver to see a live watching of Black Panther with the Vancouver Symphony Orchestra playing the score live. I cannot express how amazing this is. I will be doing this on a fairly regular basis. After watching Black Panther with a live orchestra, I need to do this with Jaws. So fucking bad. Now, I was able to keep this secret from Mushhead literally until we were almost in our seat. It was playing at the Orpheum. There was no advertising outside the Orpheum, and there was no advertising inside the Orpheum. She did not know until we got into the auditorium itself, which I was thankfully able to record her walking in to realize what was happening.
That's a fucking great video. I'm so happy you sent that to the group chat. That's an awesome fucking video.
Yeah, where she cried her eyes out, as I knew she would. Mushy and I had a really great time. Now, I don't know how much you remember of the score of Black Panther.
Not a ton.
Okay. So Mushy asked...
I remember there's a fair amount of African influence, like a fair amount of like hand percussion and whatnot.
Yes, and that's exactly what I'm going to go with. So I don't know how well this will pick up on the mic, but Mushy asked, how are they going to get this sound? And this is the sound I'm talking about. Wait for it. A little bit of that. That right there. That.
Yeah. That's gotta be a small drum, right?
It is.
It's like a very small, probably long drum, if I was to guess.
It's not that long.
Maybe a rototom or something, I don't
know. Okay, I don't know the name, but we were very interested on how they were going to recreate the sound. the orchestra's sitting out there, and then I don't have much knowledge of the way orchestras work, but I have a little bit of knowledge thanks to movies like Whiplash.
Mm-hmm.
So the first violin came out.
Mm-hmm.
After the entire orchestra was sitting down, he got a very loud ovation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. All right, he's first chair, whatever. We learned afterwards that man is actually touring with the film in every city. So he's going with the movie and playing with each city's symphony orchestra.
Cool.
He had a couple solos. They were pretty good. Again, we're still wondering. I thought when he's coming out and he got such an applause, I'm like, how's he going to conduct from sitting in the first chair? Because it's the kind of ovation he got.
Yeah.
And then the conductor came out. A very large African-American man who looked amazing.
Hmm.
He apparently, I'm sorry, I can't remember his name, but he did contribute to the actual score and worked with Ludwig Göransson on the score to Black Panther.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, it gets better. So the drum player of the sound that I just played you, he says, whatever instrument it is, the actual drummer from the score is the person playing the drums at
night.
Oh,
fuck yeah.
He came out in full, he was African. He came out in traditional African wear, and he was amazing. He was so good that almost every time he played, Mushy cried.
Mm-hmm.
She could not take her eyes off of him, and he got to play front and center. He was seated next to the conductor. It was incredible. Now, the film nerd in me, of course, is going to have something to pick apart. So, if you are interested in going to see a symphony orchestra viewing of a film, my recommendation is this. Please go watch a movie you've already seen. For them to be able to accurately and more enjoyably for you to enjoy the live score, they have to take out quite a bit of the sound in the film.
Mm.
So watching Black Panther, there's not a lot of bass in the sounds. So when the Black Panther, when T'Challa punches somebody, there's no impact sound because they're playing the score. And so all the car crashes have almost no crash sound. All the fight scenes lack that bass impact that for you're sure. used to. I noticed it. Mushy didn't until I said something. So while it didn't detract from my viewing, for someone like myself, it was highly noticeable. Does that mean it affected my enjoyment of the film? No. Because the live orchestra was so incredible, it raised my rating of Black Panther from a 4 to a 5. I cannot express how incredible this experience was. The other thing I'd recommend is I didn't know where we should sit. So I got us down in the bottom part, 6 rows from the front. They were really great seats. Next time, I'm going in the balcony. I want to be able to see the entire orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
I could only see like the first 2 or 3 people in each row. It's fucking spectacular. I cannot wait to see what films they do next year. The only one left on the schedule this year is Raiders of the Lost Ark. And while I would definitely do that, it's like next month and I just can't drop that kind of cash. I highly recommend for anyone in any major city or close to a major city, do this at your earliest convenience. As soon as you see a movie that you believe is one that you enjoy, fucking go do it. I immediately started racking my brain, like what other movies would I want to see this in? Jaws is the top of my list. Mushy said a great one because it has a great score, but there's no way they'd ever do it, and it's Lawrence of Arabia.
Oh, yeah.
Great score, but a 3.5-hour film? Not happening.
No, they're not doing it. Oh, dude, those poor horn players. Oof. Be tough.
Rachel got to see Jurassic Park last year. I would definitely do that.
Yep.
I said Interstellar would be great.
But it's really just the pipe organ.
It is. And then also, I'd be watching it, loving the score, and enjoying it, and then knowing I'm going to leave fucking angry. Which leads me into my next thing. I did not run this by you, but this is a special gift for our PFG Wes. Wes has heard me talk about Interstellar a couple times, but has never heard me give the reason why I hate the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Why I hate the ending.
I've heard this, but I never tire of hearing it.
Okay. So, this is for you, Wes. He texted me, and I said it would be hard for me to explain via text, and I actually was going to try and text it, and I realized I can just put it on a show, and Wes will hear it. So, after I finish recording this, I'll text Wes that it'll be in the next edition of Real Talk. So, for everyone else, this is literally for one PFG. Sit tight. And, well, Sam says...
Are we getting off Black Panther? Are we...
Yeah.
Okay. Just real quick, I want to say Anthony Parnther was the conductor. Was the large black individual you saw.
Okay.
And Musumba Diop was the guy playing the small drum, which is called a tama.
Okay.
Apparently, it has a lot of different names in a lot of different African languages, but in his particular language, tama.
The one thing... I'll get on this. Wes, don't worry. I haven't forgotten you. The tama player. So, he has this... stick that he uses to hit it, but he also uses his fingers, and he uses his fingers in like a strumming motion. He doesn't bring his, at times he'll bring his hand away, most of the time it's right by there. I was so impressed because I couldn't hear the difference between he used the stick, which he did use like this, I know it's a visual, or when he was strumming with his fingers. They both sounded the same, so that finger strength is astounding to me.
Some hand percussion players are absolutely incredible. I don't listen to a lot of music and say... I'm sorry, I realize it's a tangent on a tangent on a tangent. There is the name of an Indian hand drum, which I'm kicking myself for forgetting right now. All of my coworkers would shit on me for not remembering this.
Cool. Good thing they don't listen.
truly. But some of the hand strength on some of the West African drum players and also the... South Indian hand percussion players.
Yeah.
The finger strength on these people is nuts. And I know I've met a couple of these players who have like, pretty severe arthritis from absolutely pounding on hand drums through a lot of their life.
Yeah. He was amazing.
Yeah. Anyway, okay. I'm so happy you got to see that. And I'm insanely jealous. I would love to go to a performance of literally anything. First movie that comes to mind is Babylon. I would love to see. Dude, that would be a crazy one. Anyway, yeah, sorry.
Okay.
So we can get off that.
Yeah.
And Interstellar, man. Interstellar. Why do you hate it?
Okay. Wes, this is for you. I'm going to use Sam as my proxy. Sam will help me. He knows how to answer these in the way that will allow me to. Sam, what is the driving force of Matthew McConaughey's character in the movie Interstellar?
He wants to save the planet for his daughter.
Yes. Do you also remember one of the most powerfully emotional scenes in Interstellar?
Where he's yelling Murph?
Yes. No.
Oh, is it the video?
Yeah.
Yep. It's where he talks to a grown-up version of his daughter, and he's sobbing because he's realized he missed it. He missed her growing up.
27 years.
Yes.
Okay. The entire film is about Matthew McConaughey trying to both save the planet as well as save his daughter, who is on the planet.
And ideally, return home to see his daughter.
Yes. The whole thing is about getting back to his daughter, which, super shitty, he also has a fucking son.
Yeah, but his son grows up to be Casey Affleck, so. Yes.
So, we get to see this man try his best to help save Earth, but... the little driving force of this, of his character in that movie, is to save his daughter and to get back to Murphy.
Don't leave me, Murph. Don't leave me, Murph.
Yes. No, fuck it. I'm spoiling Interstellar. Spoiling Interstellar. 3, 2, 1, go fuck yourself. Everyone thinks when I say I don't like the ending, they think I'm talking about when he goes into the fourth dimension behind the bookshelf. No.
That's cool.
I think that's cool. Yeah. It's an incredibly inventive way to use gravity and all that. Cool. Zero problems with it. The entire runtime of this movie, he is desperate to get back to his daughter. And when he finally does, he sees she's an old lady, and he's like, see you later, old lady. I'm heading to space to go fuck Anne Hathaway. It's literally 5 fucking minutes he's with his daughter, who he has spent years trying to get back to. He's spent everything in his power to get back to. And the moment he gets back to his daughter, he's like, I'm fucking out of here. Are you fucking kidding me? Oh, he also learns he has grandchildren. Has no desire to meet them whatsoever. I don't give a fuck about my grandchildren. See ya, old lady. Have a nice fucking life. I'm going to fuck Anne Hathaway. That movie is fucking brutal. 98% of the movie is brilliance, and the ending makes no fucking sense. I am a father. If my driving force was to get back to see Maya, and I finally did, I'm not leaving her fucking side for any pussy. I don't give a fuck. It made me so mad, and it made me mad back then before I had a daughter. That makes no sense whatsoever. It is the reason why I hate the last, 10 minutes of the movie? Mm-hmm. The rest of the movie is brilliant. You should see Sam's face. He's so happy right now.
I'm trying not to. I'm covering my mouth so he can't see me beaming, but it's not working.
I cannot let go of this. It bothers me so much. Rant over, Wes. I hope that was worth the wait.
Yeah, so for me, I didn't really have a problem with it. No, I totally see your point, honestly. And the funny thing is, it didn't even really dawn on me when I saw the movie the first time, or the second time, or the third time. Something about the ending felt off, for sure. But yeah, that's egregious when you point it out.
It's horrible.
It's still a 4-star movie for me. The movie's great.
Oh, it's a 4-star.
Yeah, it's a 4-star.
I'm not lying. It's the ending that keeps it from a 5.
Yeah, for sure it is.
I cannot forgive it. Yeah. I can't. Even more so since becoming a dad.
Yeah. Which is funny because I can't think of, like, other Nolan movies have pretty good endings, have pretty iconic endings.
Yeah.
I think, like, people, there are a fair share of people who have their problems with the ending of, like, Inception, per se, but that's just mostly people who don't like open-ended endings. But yeah.
Oh, shit, never mind. I did have a daughter when Interstellar came out.
Yeah?
She just
2012?
Born. 14.
Really? Oh, okay.
Yeah, the year she was born.
Oh, yeah.
So I would have been a brand new father. Maybe that's why I'm so angry.
Yeah. Maybe. Maybe.
Holy shit, it's a 4.3.
Yeah, people love that movie, man. I guess they just don't know. It's a bunch of non-parents.
Yeah.
It's a bunch of non-parents.
Holy shit, one of my favorite podcasters gave it a 3.5.
Mm.
Oh, one of my other favorite podcasters gave it a 3. I love you, boys. Okay.
Are you talking about us? Because...
No.
Okay.
All right. So
dude,
Wes...
that was awesome. That was fucking great. I'm so happy we did that.
Wes, that was for you and for anybody else who was ever wondering my opinion on Interstellar.
I will never... The day may come where I grow tired of hearing you talk about that, but it's not today.
Well, I'm glad that I brought a smile to your... A big smile to your face. You were really enjoying that.
Big time.
All right. That wraps up Real Talk. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. If you give us a 5-star rating and a positive review, it does increase the profile of our podcast, allows more people to find us. You can email us at sammandymoviepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Spotify, where you answer our weekly question. I will read your answer on air, I promise. And you can follow us on Instagram and Threads at sam_manny_movie. You can also follow us on Letterboxd at Sam Reimer and Manny42, respectively. For the Samuel Emmanuel Movie Podcast, I'm Manny Emmanuel.
Don't leave me, Murph. I'm Sam Reimer.
Adios.